Good evening. So this is Wednesday night, and I'm done with my break. We've gone through 4 or 5 books in the last few years. I started it up. Is Path World on tonight? Path World. If I was going to study with a group, and I did it online, and we went through that. We went through practical work health, the MPN. We did Joy of Sacrifice, and we've just finished This Voyage. And it's important to recall it as a voyage. And to attempt to recall the voyage as we go through the following weeks. Because what will happen is you'll come to the class and you go, oh, yeah, that was really something, and then forget about it, and then a week later, oh, that was really... The key is to create a bridge between those times. We come together. Molly, how many people, does it say, how many viewers are there? Not those? 16 of us come together. There are 5 of us here in this room. And that creates the event. So part of creation of the event is the individuals coming together with the intent to be together. That is part of the thing. That is a element to it, is actually arriving and actually invoking for yourself the intention to do it. This particular book, in a certain way, in my opinion, and I'd be happy to debate it at some time with Ivan and Silverdale, in many ways, for me, represents the third part of the series. The three series being HBM, Life in the Labyrinth. And then there was going to be a third book. And there was a number of attempts at that so-called third book. And Mick Perry isn't online, but I think the form it took, and this is a blast from the past, is that EJ... We had built Bardo Town. Do you remember this?
This is a PGL. You're talking about practitioners. Practical Guide to the Labyrinth. Yeah.
And we built Bardo Town. I don't know if anybody was around for that. You guys weren't here. Jana remembers. And it was this big, huge setup of Bardo Town. And then EJ was taking innumerable photos with a pinhole camera, which gave a remarkable effect of these miniatures. The set was, there was 356, I believe, element units, and you put them in cards, and each one had a saying below it. And that was your Bardo moment of the day. That was your Bardo sign of the day. Right? That's what we're talking about here. So, is a practical methodology. As we've gone this far down, I'm 62 years old, and after that amount of time on planet Earth, it becomes clear that theory is no longer what's fun. Theory is no longer where the juice is. The juice is in the pragmatic, driving this into our day-to-day life. That's what we're here for, and that's what we're here together to do, is to find ways and means. You'll hear me say that all the time, ways and means, and how do they apply specifically to you? Specifically to you in your specific daily life. And right now, as I say that, I'm thinking of about 5 individuals who I've had contact with in the last week or two that are going through a lot of stuff. What a joy to do that. Be able to go through a lot of stuff and have this context. Okay? Now, this class we're doing a little bit differently. I want you to hear this specifically. Each class I have asked two people to write a summary of the chapter. And those people write the summary of the chapter and present that to me. I've edited it a little bit, and then I put it up online, that summary. If you go to wingsofchaos.com and look under Hidden Work Chapter 1, you'll see the summary that was produced by Lupe and George. And we may not be able to hear you very well if you speak on the phone, because we're having phone trouble here. But are both of you on the phone at the moment?
David, I'm on the line, and I went on Wings of Chaos. I wasn't able to find that summary that you posted.
Did you go on? When did you last go on there?
15 minutes ago.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
No, it's there. I saw it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, it is there.
Part of the Hidden Work.
So you go to the Hidden Work, Chapter 1. I have a brief introduction. Then I post their summary. And the exercise of doing that is twofold. One, though, I'll buy a phone for next class, because this one, maybe it's the phone that's dying. But we won't be able to hear. There's two dynamics. There's one is penetrating the information, but then it's working together to produce the summary. Now, Chapter 2 is going to be Susan and Aria, Susan Kester. And are they both on? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I've been informed that that's probably going to be a two-week class, which will push the Chapter 3 summary an extra week. And I haven't confirmed with Susan and Aria that that's the case, but that's the initial feeling. So when I know that, then I'll tell the Chapter 3 people that they can move one extra week. By the end, at the end of this class, we'll take an extra few minutes, and we'll look at assigning Chapter 4. But then you'll be working together. For me, it's interesting not only what you produce, because that's of great interest. It tells a lot about the authors. But it's also important, how do you actually work together? Did you work together? Did you work together in such a way that you brought the best to the table with each other? And I'm not picking people that necessarily that even knew each other before. So we'll look at how that proceeds. Are there any questions, Jana, that have come up that we need to address? Okay, getting introduced into it. All right, so what we're working on now is the Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. I don't know if you can see this. Can they see this? Good. The first chapter is remarkably short, but it lays down an incredible challenge. And we'll approach that challenge together. Try not to break everything apart here, Ivan, if I can. Here's the summary if you haven't read it.
Oh, okay.
So what we're going to do first is we're going to start our way through this chapter and see where we get. Okay? We're not going to read the summary yet. We may read it a little bit. But we're going to read the chapter. So this is Chapter 1 of The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. And Ivan, do you want to get us started then? Chapter 1's near the beginning.
A fragment on parchment?
Yes.
Even if we knew what human life on earth was for, would knowing the real purpose of our lives be enough of a motivation to actually get to work?
Now,
pardon me.
Go ahead. Are you talking?
Are you talking?
I need to type this in on the computer.
Well, Lupe might be driving. Anyway, we can't hear you, so we probably have a failed phone in terms of phone's not working. I can't hear from the phone.
David, I hear you loud and clear, and I did check on Wings of Chaos. That summary is posted there. Of course it is.
Okay, good. Thank you so much, George. Okay. So
we heard George that time.
That was good and clear. So let's pause a moment and look at this header. So this chapter is called A Fragment on Parchment. And the author uses the, you know, evokes a little mystery here. It's a piece of parchment, so it's a piece of antiquity, it's mysterious, all this sort of thing. That's okay. But let's listen to what he says. Even if we knew what human life on earth was for, what if you actually knew your purpose? Would knowing your purpose be enough motivation to actually get to work? I ask you, what if you knew that? What if you actually knew? We can look at people with great passions in their life. People that, you know, build giant buildings like Frank Gehry or Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah.
These guys, these great architects, or maybe the writers who are compelled to write in a certain way. But what if you knew what your purpose in life was? Would it change your life? Would it change how you proceed in your life? That, I'm posing that as a question. And is there, I'm actually, no, it wouldn't. Pardon? Not while I'm asleep, people are saying. I find my motivation to life, and yet I can't. I can't. It doesn't change my life. This is the critical point.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? If you sense the thing that is of great value, you found the thing of great value, the great prize before you.
The pearl of great price.
The pearl of great price you have located it. So, here sets up what I call the ultimate battle. I call it the battle of the powers and principalities. And in the angelic world, the powers and principalities, the barbarian king of the earth keeps us and wants us to stay in great sleep. Everything around us is designed to keep us in sleep, except for our sense of the essential self. It peeks through every once in a while. Okay? So let's read this next section here, and then I want to focus on it a little bit and ask one more question to you. And the way I put this, and I really appreciate the way that the author presented this, is because he's basically laying himself bare here. He's not saying, I'm going to prove something to you. He's saying, what if this is all you found, these two factors? And if you read the summary, you'll see that our contributors, Lupa and George, indicate there's two elements here that come to bear for them. So the I'm just jumping all the way ahead here, Ivan.
Mm-hmm. all the way through this chapter?
No, you, the inhabitants, okay. You've met together because the fragment contains a very important idea. So you found the fragment, he's saying, and there's nothing else in the libraries, there's nothing, but all you have, what if all we have is this fragment? And then the fragment says, in part, so you just read it, let's say, assume that you understand how to read, okay, and you are able to read this language. And so what you read, I'm on page 2, which is where the fragment begins. Then it says, the absolute is in need of a special activity. That in itself is just curious, isn't it? The absolute is in need of a special activity. And that activity is called prayer absolute, which no other being but man can perform. And the qualifier is a being with an awakened biological machine. So let me ask this question. First of all, is that curious to you when you read that? You read this and you go, the absolute is in need of a special activity. And the awakened man can perform that activity. Is that interesting? Is it curious? Is it, what does it do when you hear that?
I think it's like a bell, you know, just like the Dharma bell, you know, it's like a ringing, something that vibrates or resonates.
So something, so Ivan is saying,
through your skull.
Ivan's claiming here, he says, he reads this, the absolute is in need of a special activity, and an awakened human being can perform it. It caught his attention, it's like, grabs him in a certain way. If we had more time in a different venue, and maybe if this is that venue, I'd dig into why. What is it? What goes on in you?
Well, see, why is it a fragment of parchment? I mean, you know, it's like, I think that what EJ is suggesting here is like the, whatever you acknowledge to be more real, more true, the source of truth, you know, the ancient,
exactly.
It's the Sumerian, we deciphered the Sumerian priesthood has left this fragment of parchment, or the Space Brothers who, you know, dropped it off, spoke to the first Cro-Magnons or something, and they wrote this down in Space Brother lingo or something. You know, this is, you know, why,
and they
what's
say.
So great about a fragment of parchment? I mean, it's the lost knowledge, is what's lost has been found, and it's like, what does this do? This really, you know, cracks your shell. I mean, that's the point, is this shakes up your reality.
We have before us. Mm-hmm. If the road is revealed, it's like, well, we don't even know that yet. Because we're walking in the desert, we find this parchment, and it says, we read the first sentence, it goes, the absolute is in need of a special activity. Is in need of a special activity. It's not that the absolute would like it. Not like it says it'd be cool.
Yeah, or preferable.
It actually says the word, this particular document that you stumble, says, is in need of a special activity. And awakened humans can do it. That's the dichotomy.
Well, and I have a comment.
Okay, we may not be able to hear you just because we have a bad sound.
Give it a try.
But please give it a try.
Well, I think we never look at the absolute needing our help. And so this whole chapter, it really, I could feel that difference.
Good.
We never look at the absolute
as
needing our help, she says.
Okay, that's the kernel. This is what this book is about. This is the essence. What Susan is telling us, we never look at the absolute as needing our help. And yet here is a book that starts. It's in essence, its first sentence says, the absolute is in need of a special activity. Uh-oh. Now we're in trouble because then it says the awakened human being can do this. Okay, now I'm going to ask the people in this room, too. They were hoping they weren't going to be called on. And I'll ask the people online, do you have some sense of what it means to be and to exercise an awakened machine? M.A.? Yes. I can't remember your name. That's not his name.
Oh.
His name is... Lost Horizon.
Lost Horizon.
Huh? Lost Horizon is here in person, by the way. So can you say, give some sense, just some sense of what it means for you to be an awakened biological machine?
That's my answer too.
And you have to answer on the log now, Molly. Do you have a sense of what?
Where were you on the night of September the 26th? That's what I want to know.
If that date ever comes around. So, do you have a sense? So. What is the answer, dare I ask you, Ivan?
I don't know. You better know. I think my answer is, what me worry?
That's Ivan's way of... That's actually Ivan's way of being sarcastic.
Right.
Rather than addressing the potency of the question. And the potency of the question gets you in serious trouble because of the first phrase in that same paragraph. The absolute is in need. And the awakened machine can perform that activity. Almost as if you declare, and I declare that yes, I am aware of that awakened machine. I have some sense of it and a good sense. So I declare it not just to whoever's online right now, but in a sense I'm declaring it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay? I'm declaring it into the universe. I am one of those spots.
There's a couple comments.
Go ahead.
Jim H. said a sense of presence. But is that awakened?
Jim H. asks, a sense of presence, but is that awakened? This is where you have to play the Sly Man joke. Not joke, but the Sly Man
card.
Technique.
Oh, yeah.
Card. Because so much of this stuff, and Susan knows this point very well, so much of this stuff is, oh, they're the ones that are awakened. They're the ones that are having the spirit. Oh, my gosh. There's the spiritual people. Oh, they're the ones. They're awakened people. They. And what I say is, can you grab and harvest for yourself even a small foothold that is you are an awakened machine? And if you can do that. So, what was the phrase they used? Sense of presence? The Jim H?
Yes,
is that
sense
about right,
of presence.
Susan?
Sense of presence. But is that awakened?
Is that awakened? Yes.
Another comment from Pianjo.
Yes.
Our ideas of petitioning the absolute are turned upside down. Who will we ask for help?
Our ideas. That topic is going to be huge. This is actually a book about prayer. Okay? This is a book about prayer.
But yeah, David, I think you're if I understand you correctly, your starting point is to say, I mean, this is really a clarion call. I mean, to me,
yeah.
What this first chapter is about is what if you accept this at face value, if you just even hypothetically accept this as a truth, what could be more significant in life than this? What could be more important to do? I mean, that's what the Lee Lozowick little forward thing is about. It's like it just simply sweeps away other motivations. I mean, it sweeps away why you would do anything else in life, more or less. Certainly, in regard to awakening, it's like, okay, if it's possible to cultivate the waking state of the machine, then this is where it's headed. What else could we? What else could be of?
What a bummer.
Rival. What could rival this?
What a bummer, Ivan.
Yeah, well, that's
basically you're saying that this is more important than me going back to my place and watching my Netflix movie that just came?
Yeah, it's the greatest misfortune that could fall upon you.
Wait a minute.
In regard to your career.
I have a little pity for me.
In regard to your success in life.
It was a good movie.
In regard to your...
He's not giving me a break
ego
here.
Ego fulfillment.
My ego...
Aggrandizement.
My ego...
Appeasement.
Thanks you. So that's the gauntlet that's being laid down here. And to me, it's a huge gauntlet. And the reason I ask, I don't know if anybody else answered, Jana, did anybody else? Several people answered.
I have a couple more comments.
Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah,
I think we can hear you a little bit now.
Okay, so Simon saying, not only awakened, but fully evolved and transformed individuals.
Into what?
Fully transformed and evolved individuals?
Yes.
I am not a fully transformed and fully evolved individual.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's saying that.
Well, there's a string, and there's another comment. I can't pronounce the name. Adelson is saying that it gives me the feeling that I have to awaken so I can be of service to the Absolute.
That's it, exactly. Who,
right.
Who said that, Janet? What's the name? I'm going to have Janet tell me because that...
Adelson.
Adelson. Who is that? Put your...
The light. That's the light person.
Yeah. So that's the key right there. Read the comment again, Susan, please.
It gives me the feeling that I have to awaken so I can be of service to the Absolute.
Okay, so this is what I was trying to get at when I was looking at Ivan. Why is he intrigued by this? It gives me the feeling that I must awaken to be of service to the Absolute. Is this not good work or not? A worthy task?
Well, and Tianjo adds, it seems that we don't have to be fully transformed or always aware to prayer, only when we pray.
And I say to Tianjo, correct, we do what we can. What are we able to do? What are we able to do? Because the ego will come in and say, you know what? It's those guys that are really awakened, and they're the ones that, you know, they're the ones that can do it, because they are super awake and they blah 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 blah. That's the ego, people. That's the ego saying, shanghaiing the little that you might have, the little toehold. And I say, there's what, 15 people online. There's 15 or 20 of us here tonight. That's remarkable, because there's 15 or 20 people that are saying, I vote in this manner for this amount of time. Okay. Now, for me right now, part of what's unfolding is that I'm saying, I declare to the world, I declare to the planet, to the those powers and principalities. You'll find that phrase in the Bible. Powers and principalities. I said, I'm on board. Now, I'm the one that's responsible for knowing that sense that Ed Lucent is talking about. I feel
it. Feel it?
Yeah. It's my feeling. It's getting in touch with that feeling and that passion. That's my responsibility. I want to feel that more. We'll get into that later in other chapters. Is Aria on? Yeah, Aria will be telling us at some point about Mother Teresa, and maybe even the next chapter.
Yeah, this is a calling. I mean, I think David is talking about this is a calling. So you're hearing a calling, and then the issue is not like who else is hearing it or what else, what are they doing,
yeah,
or what is somebody else doing. It's whether this is calling to me or not. Am I called?
And
is it my calling?
And it's okay with me 1,000% if it is not your calling.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, your work is different than my work. If our paths happen to intersect, that's a joyful moment. But my work isn't dependent on you agreeing with me.
Well, no, this is not about keeping up with the Joneses, is it? I mean, it's not about comparing ourselves, actually.
That's right.
At all.
For some unfathomable reason, we of our generation do not know why, all throughout the history of human beings, a certain type of prayer was held to have some definite value to the Absolute. So, this fragment is telling us that this is kind of an objective event that people have found throughout history. A certain type of prayer was held at some definite value. Even though we today do not know exactly the purpose of prayer absolute or what value this actually may be to the absolute, we know how it was performed and we have some serious indication that many saints and messengers have thought it so important they risked their lives to reintroduce it. So, that what I want to get to is the feeling. Do you have a feeling of that? I know that, I think Hawk Lady's on. Is she there? No? She didn't make it? Yeah. That's okay. With Pathworld has a strong sense of this particular thing right at the moment because of some certain things she's going through. But what's the feeling that emerges? That emerges that is a response, not a reaction, but a response to the sensing. There's a feeling that comes up, and that's the reach that you can do. I think Ed Lucent put it really well in terms of, you know, I feel, you know, when they feel compelled to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, like, it's like you see something in need, and now you feel. That doesn't make it easy, by the way, just because you have the feeling, because you have to, there's a lot you need to do. And so the author is telling us, this is all the data you have on the planet. Forget philosophy, forget science, forget art. All you have is this parchment, this little fragment, these words. All you have is the absolute special activity and an awakened machine. But the absolute is not in need of ordinary subjective prayer. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about during this book is the concept of prayer and how prayer works in how prayer works, really. We're going to talk a lot about prayer. This happens, I'll be quoting a bit from this particular book. I don't know, can you see it? Molly? Okay. This comes from the Eastern Orthodox tradition and the tradition of the Philokalia. These were Christians when, we won't get into the history of it, but anyway, it was a huge Christian movement, but it took on a very mystical sense, very similar to a lot of what the Hindu and Buddhist, they took that flavor on a lot. And one of the things we're going to talk about eventually is that there's this concept of pray always. This is a compilation.
It's like the Jewish Talmud.
This is a compilation. These
it's
two
a
guys,
wisdom encyclopedia kind
of. Kaz Lubovsky and Palmer, were the key translators of this Russian material. But the authors are these six. Theophon the Recluse is one. He's here a lot, actually. These are what's called the Desert Fathers, okay? Way
this
old.
This is what, I think this is their your basic text in Mount Athos, for instance, in the Greek Orthodox Church.
Yeah.
They have a meditation tradition. They have a mystical tradition.
I'll just, some of the things that he'll be approaching in remembrance of God, the perils of forgetfulness, fall down as dust before the face of God, unceasing remembrance, and so on, and feeling and words. Feelings toward God, even without words, is a prayer. Words support and sometimes deepen that feeling. And they have a great deal of discussion about outer and inner prayer, the sleeping machine and the awakened machine. Just different words and different technologies. But it's the technology ultimately comes down to the same thing. What do we put into it, and how can we put into it? How can we then harvest this, in a sense, through the week that comes before us? We have a week now between here and the next class. And how is this going to boil in you and it's going to sit in you? So the absolute doesn't need subjective prayer, which is to say supplication for some personal favor to be granted by the absolute. Dear Lord, please help my daughter get the scholarship to Yale.
Tomorrow,
Lord. That's an example of supplication. To be granted by the absolute for the gratification of the supplicant. Now, that's a touchy one. And this is one that we're going to, you have to have the sense that the ego is like chasing us all the time. It's always there. And almost always there. And so when you start to pray and you get into a place of pure prayer, in a sense, to the absolute, even then you must be vigilant. And that's kind of a word, Aria, that we'll get to when we get to your chapter, you and Susan, is vigilance. Because, you know, you go, oh, yeah, I'm really praying well now. I'm doing a pretty good job. Yeah, I'm praying really in a pure manner. That's pretty good. Oops. Very difficult to hold the state, the inner state of supplication and this prayer absolute, which will unfold during the next several chapters during the book. That's what the book's about. Okay? Goes on to say, but prayer, which is the reverse. Now we're not saying how can I get something for me, but how can I do something? No prayer ordinary man performs in any ordinary way will suffice to alleviate the suffering of the Absolute. None. However, real prayer is a technical activity. Why did the author use that term? Real prayer is a technical activity.
Well, it certainly separates, separates us from begging.
Okay.
I mean, that's one answer.
It must mean that there's something exactly you're supposed to be doing.
There's an exactness to it. There's an objective exactness to it. Now, we'll unfold this as the book goes on, but think of right now if I said, okay, but you already are, if I said, okay, do what you'd normally do to awaken the machine. Do what you would normally do to awaken the machine right now. Good. Very good. And now pay attention to that. Do you know how to get there? Do you know how to get there in any circumstance? I'm not talking now about, oh yeah, I just fall asleep all the time. So what? Can you find the will from time to time during the week to awaken the machine? And when you're in that sense of awakening and begin to understand it as a technical activity, and understand the nuances of it. Does that make sense to you, Susan? The nuances of it?
Yes, although I don't know what the nuances are yet.
Correct. But we understand that there are nuances. We're opening up, we're placing our attention in an area that is hidden. It's called the hidden work because we don't look there very much. Now we're looking there. And we're putting a light on it. We're starting to see, oh, I see. Yeah, I do that. So technical activity. Prayer Absolute is entirely different activity in the category. A, requiring the temporary passage of those performing this service into a higher dimension. So we're talking about, I'm going to use the word transit, right? So when you're in the prayer, there's this transit. It's like you're moving on a railroad track. You can see that you move. It's the same thing. This is the same thing. It's transit. It's just that we're moving. We're not, as we'll see from Theophon the Recluse, we're not in the outer prayer. In a different, we're in the inner prayer. When we're in the inner prayer, then the movement has a different character to it, doesn't it? And we measure it differently. We don't measure it, I walked 10 feet, or I went up or down or sideways. It's an inner sensing. And if you read what George and Lupe wrote, they discuss this slightly. So those performing the service into a much higher dimension, and then for the sake of the Absolute. So Adlucent, that's it in a nutshell. So, and Jim, you know, Jim H., to the extent that we are able to exercise our presence, Simon, to the extent that we are able, that then is something we can do. And I've told you the story about Brother Lawrence, right? The Christian, he was the least of the monks. He was like the lowest of the monks. And so he always had to wash the dishes. So they always put him in the kitchen cleaning up after the meal and, you know, all the and then the big heavy guys would go out and do important stuff. But so he wound up washing the dishes. That's all he could do. He just wasn't able to do much else. But he washed the dishes and washed the dishes. And then, as he puts it in his beautiful little tract, he says, "And among the soap bubbles, there I found God." Okay? It makes sense. And Ivan knows it makes sense because Ivan has done that.
Lots of dishes, yeah.
And he has found the divine in all many activities that he has done. It appears to be, at first, ruling external activities. But I guarantee you that when he puts on his painting clothes to go paint the room somewhere, he has a different sense that descends on him. Not at first, but after he gets into it a bit. And then he becomes different. And he goes to this higher state. So that's all we have is this. The fragment leaves off. So that's all you have. You have that there is something that the Absolute needs. The awakened machine can do it, and it's called prayer absolute. It has something with transiting to a higher dimension. It's all you got. It's all the information that's available. What now do you do with it? What now do you do with it? You now understand that the Absolute needs something from you. But you do not know exactly what. How are you to discover what you must do? That's basically where we all sit. So the reason I focus on the feeling, I know a number of the people that are on, that they have a profound feeling for what we're talking about here. Profound. Beautiful feeling. And I'm just saying that is yours. You own that. That is for you. That's the small foothold you have, whether it's a little toehold that your boots have on the ledge, but it nevertheless is a toehold, right?
Sure.
It's something. So I'm saying don't wait till you're the great enlightened saint. Because guess what? That's not what's going to happen. But you can do something from where you are. You can. So, George, Lupe, are you there?
Yep.
Is there anything that you'd like to say or help us along a little bit here?
Well, I think that Lupe summarized it very well there. You know, we came up with two bottom lines. One is, what is an awakened machine? How do we achieve that? And then an awareness, we thought we could infer from this that there is a distinction between ego and essence. Ego pertaining to supplication and essence seeking unification or participation with.
Lupe, are you in a position where you can speak at all, or are you driving and it's not okay?
No, it's okay that I can speak.
Good. Would you like to say something about your feelings about your sense of the chapter, or something you'd just like to share with us as a group?
As a sense of the chapter, I shared with George that I struggled with it. I was very confused with the absolute prayer because I was kind of stuck in what I had learned in the past, and it was hard for me to break through and be able to share. However, George was really helpful in that. And when it came to the absolute prayer, it was really learning, and I believe like Susan said it earlier, it was like really not knowing, not realizing that the prayer absolute needs our help, and how can we be of service? So it was really learning and working to be able to get the essence out, and not be full of ego, that I could do this better, or I can do it this way. Knowing and learning how to be able to do that. I'm in the process of the writing. That is actually, and even in our discussion with George, that is something that we were both able to work well, where it was, we both opened up ourselves and we allowed the essence to come out to be able to help us write what we ended up writing.
So part of the process of working together, am I correct in saying that when you were working together, you both got into that space of the essential self?
I believe that we did, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Listen to that very carefully. With clarity, they both said yes. They say yes. So there's a certain, I'm going to call it effort, that comes forth when you put yourself in this kind of a position, all right? There's a certain effort that comes forth. That effort is the gold. That's the alchemical substance and the alchemical fire. So when we're working in this area, is what we pound lead into gold. Now, I want to comment on something that Lupe said that was incredibly important. Her old way of looking at it in the past, is that about right, Lupe?
Yes.
Okay. This is an important topic because of what everybody said at first when they said, can you keep your machine awake? And everybody says, well, no, because even if I knew what my goal was, I keep falling asleep. Falling asleep has a technical meaning, and it partly means I go back into the external. As Theophon the Recluse will tell us later, I'm into external or outer prayer. Now, so for Lupe, she has the prize of sensing there was some attitude or sense or thought that she had about her old sense of God or the absolute. And if we can begin to see that about each other and about ourselves, and you give it vent, and you let that old feeling come forth, it actually starts to clear it from you. But you have to recognize it. You can't just say, oh yeah, I have inadequate feelings. I'll just ignore them and go on to what's correct. Uh-uh. It's like you have to sense your confusion directly. And then you can be set free. That's the truth that they're talking about. So that's a very encouraging to hear that working together in that way was so fruitful. And I appreciate very much what you both wrote. And it feels like there was substance on it. Now, we're kind of coming a little bit toward the end, but the next chapter is a little bit longer. And is Aria, did she ever come? Aria is there. And Susan is on the phone. So, okay. So the next chapter is called The Hidden Work. And it's kind of meaty, even though it's short in a certain way. But do you think it's going to take 2 weeks, Susan and Aria? And Aria, you can type in your answer too.
I think that we decided that it'll take 2 weeks. Yes.
Aria's saying yes online.
2 weeks.
Yes.
Okay. So if you want, then write up the summary of whatever you consider the first half will be. I won't tell you what I think the first half is. Just you tell me what you think it is. And then the second, or you can do it all in one, either way. But so it'll take, if it takes us 2 weeks to get to that chapter, then Hawk Lady and Pyonja will do the next chapter. But, Harry, it'll be 1 week later than I had said. All right? And did I say to get this summary to me by Thursday, Susan?
We were probably going to finish off this thing, so yes, we can get it to you by Thursday. That's tomorrow.
Okay. Then if I get it by Thursday, I can work with it a little bit, back and forth with you guys, and then post it, and then send it out. Then I can send out the email for the class, like over the weekend. And so that'll be the model that we'll use. Okay.
Thursday being tomorrow.
Thursday, they're supposed to get me their summary. They've been online now for a few weeks working on this, and so is Hawk Lady and Harry. And so the chapters 2 and 3, 1 is already done. A great job. Wonderful. I love that summary, by the way. And then chapter 3 I've already assigned. So chapter 4 is called Bound in Return. That one's still open. It's probably about 3 or 4 weeks away. And I was wondering if there's anybody that is particularly likes that chapter, and if they want to either email me or put it in the log, that's okay. Or if in 1 week I don't hear from anybody, then I'm going to pick 2 people. I already have 2 people in mind, actually. Is Mark Birch online, by the way? Is Mark hiding?
Mark is there.
Okay. So are there any other questions then about this particular chapter 1 and the roller coaster ride that we have started on this? Mark is hiding in plain sight. He has been discovered. And there he is pointed to, and we all see him because of this special camera setup that we have here, where we actually can see you. So anyway, that's, if there are no other questions, Molly or Susan or... Oh, good.
Long.
Great, Robert. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. So there we have it. Chapter 1, The Hidden Work, we're done for the moment. I don't know how this one's going to be very different. It's 8:03. Okay, this will be very different from any of the other books, I guarantee you. All right.
Yeah, also, actually, I wanted to mention that this was
the
Day of Atonement, you know, in the Hebrew calendar. In the Jewish annual calendar, we just closed the High Holy Days. So at sunset, which has just happened during this class here in California, the Day of Atonement ended, or as EJ often calls it, At-One-Ment, Yom Kippur.
Do you want to say a little bit about that and maybe read a poem that you have?
Well, I can read. Yep, we're going to go over time. I can read this poem.
Well, it's going to take us another few minutes.
Yeah,
it's worth it.
It's
an important day.
Yeah, this is the new year. On the Jewish calendar, the new year comes in the fall, so it's called Rosh Hashanah. And then there are 10 days that are called the Days of Awe, where you have to, traditionally, part of what you do is settle all contracts, debts, you take care of anything outstanding, you know, anybody that you have to apologize to, anybody you've sinned against, and, you know, you try to store up points, and then you go to synagogue and so on. You pray. It is the a lot of it is the supplication type of prayer, because it's the idea is to assure that you're written down in the book of life for another year. It's like assuring your survival, assuring your good fortune, assuring all of this and that. You know, on the other hand, there's also, it's very, very old, very traditional music and prayer, the liturgy and so on. A lot of it is very Kabbalistic, and there's a lot of mystical material in those services and in the High Holy Days liturgy. And, you know, a lot of it is going in this direction, which is how, you know, honoring and hallowing the name of the Holy One, blessed be He, and so on. It's like just like the Kaddish, you know. Actually, you know, I won't go into that, but the Kaddish prayer that's said at every Sabbath service, you know, in the Jewish synagogues, is, you know, you say this Kaddish for the people, for people in your family who have died. You say it for the ancestors, basically, for those who have passed. But it's the Kaddish doesn't say anything about death at all. It says how great and holy and how greatly extolled is the name of the Lord, and so on. It's about, it's all about honoring the Absolute, actually.
This
remembering.
Is very,
it's about remembrance and honoring the source.
This
the
is
absolute.
A very this is a very important class mystically too, Ivan. The class that we're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping you and I know a little teeny bit about, I'm far less than you, about the mystical tradition of the great mystical tradition in, of the Jewish race, which is phenomenal in my opinion.
Well, I think it dovetails a lot. I mean, you know, I think the Philadelphia, you know, there's Reb Zalman has, you know, a lot to say, you know, it's really relative to this inner and outer prayer and, you know, all of that sort of
and,
thing.
And I'll be
a
speaking
lot of the formulations are
I'll be
similar.
Speaking a lot from the point of view of Christian mystics.
Yeah.
And
okay, that's
and,
good.
And you, I hope, will bring the mystical sense of the Jewish tradition, which I, as you so well know, I'm so profoundly affected by.
Mm.
So but do you have something to read for us?
Well,
as
a little
poem?
Something I thought I would pass on this, but the what actually makes me really want to read this is this phrase that we hadn't noticed before, which is on page 3, where EJ has written, "Real prayer is a technical activity, not necessarily enjoyable or understandable." Okay, so I would say that, you know, any of the arts can be like that sometimes too. Like poetry is like that sometimes for me. This is a poem actually that I wrote on the Day of Atonement some years ago. I was set myself a task of writing something for every day, you know, during this period for 10 days, basically. And I'd say this poem is in the category that it's not necessarily enjoyable or understandable for me. I wasn't actually sure what it was when I wrote it, but it's related to the Day of Atonement. It's called Fire Reflected in Water, which is a, sort of comes from somewhere in the mystical tradition, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And this is the last. Actually, it's the sixth in the series. I didn't actually save all 10 days worth of writing because I didn't think it was all of value. But this is the last piece. Fire reflected in water. The sentinels listen constantly, either confused or amused by humans' misunderstanding of the hardness-softness dichotomy. The earth, fire, the water, air, sometimes called the material versus immaterial question. Even the most idealistic people see the illusion of air as empty, the illusion of rocks, trees, and bodies in general as solid, even if only solid seeming, the phantoms of their dreams or their solipsistic imaginations. The sentinels stand so solid, they are more invisible than the atmosphere. While our bodies shimmer and pour from one frame into another, sometimes leaving tracks of mercury or carnelian droplets in the iron-hard air.
Nice.
The cypress trees smoke and flicker on the hillsides, the grass sparks, even boulders undulate with their remembered fires of carbon and silicon mobility. Across this holocaust of life, burning bluer and whiter than younger created things, move the beings in their luminescence, their fiery signatures threatening constantly to disappear into the encroaching medium, a closed hole, or to drift up to hardened space, to journey toward fixed stars or to vaporize prematurely into random dust. The sentinels wait and watch for the unlikely, the unexpected, yet inevitable event. They watch for the liquid oxygen being that flares and leaps up, burning higher and more intensely until its small flame merges with the one clear, unfettered light. They, motionless, applaud and return to their implacable witnessing.
The sentinels.
Yeah.
And as we become
watchers,
luminous beings, the sentinels take notice. That's the voyage we're on now. We've begun the voyage, and we will continue it next week, also on Wednesday evening. We'll start again at 7 o'clock on Chapter 2 of The Hidden Work. Thank you for coming. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, David. And I-